ஜெயம் விஷ்ணுபாத பரமஹம்ச பரிபிராஜகாச்சாரியா விஷ்ணோத்தர சதஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீமான் அபயசரணாரவிந்த பக்திவேதாந்த கோஸ்வாமி மகராசீல பிரபுபாதிக்கு ஜெயம். நித்திலீலா பிரவிஷ்டா விஷ்ணுபாத பரமஹம்ச பரிபிராஜகாச்சாரியா அஷ்டோத்தர சதஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீமான் பக்தி சித்ராக்ர சரஸ்வதி மகாராஜ் ஸ்ரீல பிரபுபாதிக்கு அனந்தகுடி வைஷ்ணவ பிருந்தக்கு நாமாச்சாரிய ஸ்ரீ ஹரிதாஸ் தாக்கூர்க்கு பிரயம் சகோ ஸ்ரீகிருஷ்ண சைதன்ய பிரபு நித்யானந்த ஸ்ரீஅத்வைத கதாதார ஸ்ரீவாசாதி கௌர பக்த பிருந்தக்கு ஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீ ராதா கிருஷ்ண கோப கோபிநாத ஷியாமகுண்ட ராதாகுண்ட கீ கோவர்தானிக்கு விருந்தாவன் தாம்கி மாயப்பூர் தாம்கி மதுரபுரி தாம்கி ஜெகநாத்புரி தாம்கி துவாரகாபுரி தாம்கி கங்கமாய்க்கு யமுனமாய்க்கு துளசிதேவிக்கு பக்தி தேவிக்கு சாமவேத பக்த பிருந்தக்கு கௌர் பிரேமநந்தி. ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு அசம்பிள் டிபோடிஸ், ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு அசம்பிள் டிபோடிஸ், ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு அசம்பிள் டிபோடிஸ், ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு ஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீ குரு அண்ட் ஸ்ரீ கௌரங்க, ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு ஸ்ரீல பிரபுபாத். நமோ விஷ்ணுபதாய கிருஷ்ணப்பிரசாய பூதலே ஸ்ரீமதே பக்திவேதாந்த சுவாமினி இதி நாமினே நமஸ்தே சரஸ்வதி தேவி கௌரவாணி பிரஜாரிணே நிர்விசேஷ சூன்யவாதி பாஷாத்ய தேசதாரிணி. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய, ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய, ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய, ஓம் பார்த்தாய பிரதிபோதிதாம் பகவதாம் நாராயணேன ஸ்வயம் வியாசேன கிருதிதாம் புராண முனிநாம் மத்யே மகாபாரதம் அத்வைதாமிருத வர்ஷணீ பகவதி அஷ்டாதசாத்யாயினிம் அம்பத்வாமன சந்ததாமி பகவத்கீதே பவத்வேஷினி நமோஸ்துதே வியாச விஷால புத்தே புல்லாரவிந்தாயத பத்ரநேத்ர யேன த்வயா பாரத தைல பூர்ண பிரஜ்வாலிதோ ஞானமய பிரதீபம் பிரபன்ன பாரிஜாதாய தோத்ரவேத்ரைக பாணயே ஞானமுத்ராய கிருஷ்ணாய கீதாம்பர துஹே நம. சர்வோ வம்சதோ காவோ துக்தா கோபால நந்தனா பார்த்தோ வல்ஸ சுதீர் போக்தா துக்தம் கீதாமிருதம் மஹத் வசுதேவ சுதம் தேவம் கம்சச்சாணூரமர்தனம் தேவகீ பரமானந்தம் கிருஷ்ணம் வந்தே ஜெகத்குரும். பீஷ்மத்ரோணதடா ஜெயத்ரதஜலா காந்தார நீலோல்பல சல்யக்ராஹவதீ கிருபேண வஹனீ கர்ணேன வேலா குலா அஸ்வத்தாமா விகர்ண கோரமகரா துரியோதனாவர்த்தினி சோகீர்ண கலு பாண்டவைரண நதீ கைவர்த்தக கேசவ பாராசரியவஜ சரோஜமலம் கீதார்த்தகந்தோல்கடம் நானாக்கியானகேசரம் ஹரிகதா சம்போதனாபோதிதம் லோகை சஜ்ஜனஷல்பதைரஹரஹ பேபீயமானம் முதா பூயாத் பரத பங்கஜ கலிமல பிரத்வம்சின ஸ்ரேயசே. முகம் கரோதி வாசாலம் பங்கும் லங்கயதே கிரிம் எல் கிருபாதமஹம் வந்தே பரமானந்த மாதவம். ஸ்ரீகிருஷ்ணாய நம, ஸ்ரீமதி ராதிகாயை நம, சர்வத்ர கோவிந்த நாம சங்கீர்த்தனம் கோவிந்த கோவிந்தம். Krishna was saying that the three knowledge in three different modes, Satyam, Rajasam, Tamasam. Sarvabhuteshu yenegam bhavam avyamikshade avibhaktam vibhakteshu taljnanam vidhi satyugam pradaktyanadiya jnanam nanabhavan pradaktvidhan veti sarveshu bhuteshu taljnanam vidhi rajasam yattu krishna கிருஷ்ணமதேகஸ்மின் காரிய சக்தமஹைதுகம் அதத்வார்த்தவக அதல்பம் ஜா தத்தாமசமுதாகிருதம். ஸோ we were talking yesterday that for a devotee who is in the mood of satogunam, satya jnanam, he is not affected by the happiness and distress of this world, and even the prarabdham that comes in life is does not affect him. And Krishna says that he is the uttama bhakta, or the best devotee, right? And when we see this definition of Krishna's definition of bhakti, then naturally we are worried that whether we have the understanding of bhakti in the right way. In Kapilopadesham, that is what is mentioned, that madriha gunasaktam bandhakral teshwasaktam tumrita kripa duparyandhe bhakti yogastu saktim mahadanu gamalabhyam bhakti revatra sadhyam kabilata nirudityam devahuti negadi. In Narayaniyam, Milpattur says this. Mahadanu gamalabhyam bhakti revatra sadhyam. That Mahatmas have to decide whether from them Mahadanu gamalabhyam bhakti revatra sadhyam. That means the secret of bhakti we have to learn from them, from Mahatmas. The secret of bhakti, what bhakti is, right? So that means in seeing this principle of seeing Krishna's presence in everyone, that secret, right? What they are saying is that at that point the world deals with the devotee in such a way that as though Krishna is responding to him, all the powers in the nature. When the devotee sees Krishna's presence in everything, the world also responds accordingly to him. That is what the point is making here, right? This secret of Mahadani Gamalabhyam Bhakti Revatra Sadhyam Kabila Taniriditvam Devahuti Negadi. Kapila Maharshi says this to Devahuti Devi. There are stories related to this in many different ways spoken. In the time of freedom fighter time, when they were fighting for freedom, in Karnataka, there was one devotee. There were a lot of freedom fighters who were very spiritually inclined. They were interested in very interesting spiritual life, but at the same time they were fighting for the freedom as well, because of Mahatma Gandhi's influence at that time. Yeah. So this devotee, Krishna Shastri, he was in Karnataka, somewhere in Karnataka, and he was one of these freedom fighters. And at the same time, he was attached to one sannyasi when he was very young. He was associating with the sannyasi, very young, but at the same time he was involved in freedom fighting. Right? There were many people like that, and some of them were quite liberated souls, basically, but they were not famous as such, but they had a lot of influence on the society. So he wrote the history of this sannyasi with whom he was associating with, right? And they have traveled together in many, many places, this sannyasi and this Krishna Shastri together. So once they were traveling in the deep forest together. They were walking in the forest. And at that time, he says to the Swamiji, Krishna Shastri told him, I'm very hungry, he said. I need some food. I have to find some food, he said. So I can't walk even one step further. And what can you get in the forest? Thick forest. There's nothing to eat as such. Sometimes you may get some fruits or some nuts or something like that in the forest, but sometimes you may not get, if it is some deep forest, right? So, and you can't eat everything, whatever that is there, some of the things you can't even eat. Monkeys, if you look, what they do, when they can't eat any fruits or any nuts or anything like that, they will eat leaves. They have that nature in them. Yeah. So he says to Swamiji, "Swamiji, I am very hungry and Vedantam is not working for me." He said, he says to him, "I am so hungry that Vedantam is, I need some food now," he said. Swamiji said, "That is true. When you are hungry, there is no point in talking to him, Vedantam," he said. "It is not easy for them," right? So, Swamiji says to him, "All that what you see is Parameshwara Swarupam, Krishna Swarupam, this is the whole thing," right? And Krishna is our father, mother, relation, everything, right? And like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Gadur Bharta Prabhu Sakshi Nivasa Sharanam Suhut Prabhu Pralayasthanam Nidhanam Vijam Avyayam, all that, that's what Krishna is saying there, right? And he says to him, "You can ask anything, he will provide you," he said. The sannyasi told the Krishna Shastri, right? We don't know that secret, how to ask from Krishna, from the Prakriti, how Prakriti provides, right? Animals knows that, how to do that, right? They don't think like that. They have faith in that nature will provide. They don't know God and all the ways we talk about, but they have a faith in their existence, that they are conscious that when the food is necessary, it will be arranged somehow. That is why that story of Python in the 24 Spiritual Masters. He doesn't go looking for food. Food comes to him. He knows it will come. And if the food doesn't come, he will stay there till the food comes. He will be hanging on from the banyan trees and huge trees. And some animal will come underneath and they will fall on that and tie it around and eat them. So, in our case, we with all our intelligence, and we have studied botany, zoology, biology, this, all these things, right? And many things we have in Ayurvedam also. There are people highly qualified with all the degrees, you know, MD and all that kind of degrees they have, right? But we don't have this power like the animals have got of being able to get from the nature what you want at the time when you need it, right? So, in fact, they are saying that the Ayurvedic people also agree that how did they find out the medicinal potency of the various plants in the forest? There are so many plants in the forest, from there they extract the medicine. Ayurveda medicine is coming from them, mostly from the herbs, in the plants and the creepers and all other things. How did they get that? They used to follow goats, cows, and all other animals, and used to see what they were doing. And the goats, they observed that, particularly the goats, they have the capacity to extract. When they get sick, they will look here, there, everywhere, and they'll go and find something, and they'll eat that, and they'll get cured. So this nature in the animals, that they are able to, they don't have a super speciality hospitals and medical sciences institute, big hospitals, nothing. They live in this world in that way, that they have that capacity to know that nature will provide what is necessary. So it is in the same way they have learned from the monkeys a lot of things, from the cows, from the goats, and all these things, right? For example, in the forest, they won't know sometimes where water is available. So what they do, they get hold of monkeys and feed them a lot of salt. When the salt goes in, they are thirsty. And then they follow the monkey, and monkey will find out where the water is. And then you will know also where the water is. This is the method they used in the past, right? So we won't know where the water is, but monkey will tell you. They have some sensitivity. You may have also seen sometimes before a landslide happens, the animals are more conscious of that than we. So when we are driving on the road, the animals will come in front of us and stop us from driving further, because they've already sensed the landslide is coming, happening. And they'll stop the traffic and they'll save you from the landslide. There's so many videos like that. You can observe that in the YouTube and all that, right? So This is the way animals are. Animals have that power given to them by nature, that lot of things in advance they can know. And also, so for example, earthquake. Birds will know about earthquake much before than we do. We will only know it when it happens. But they will know that it is happening, and they know when to escape from the earthquake. And similarly, cyclones and things like that. So, this natural capacity to interact with the nature in this way, there is a special power that they have, and due to that they get to know these things before, much in advance, before in advance than us. Similarly, they also know, that means their connection with the nature is such so strong compared to us, and we have become more and more isolated from that. And we become so so for us now everything has to be researched and find out, and then we try to be so independent of nature. In the same way, in a jnani also, a realized soul also, he also has this power in him, right? And Patanjali Maharshi says this, that if the there is a covering inside us, avaranam. If that avaranam goes away, we will also know that the nature can provide a lot of our answers, what we are looking for, right? But we also don't know how to remove that cover, avaranam, from inside, right? We are thinking that only by studying books or from internet, only you can get information. That's the way we are groomed now. Every one of us are groomed in that. Information means Google or internet or something, and or from the books. So Swamiji told this Krishna Shastri that that nature will provide. You have to have that faith, first of all, he said to him. So Shastri says to the Swamiji, right, I don't understand all these things. It's too complicated for me. I'm hungry now, he said. Yeah. So there was at that time a bird was flying on the top in the sky, right? So Swamiji stood there and said to the bird, provide something for this child, pointing out to Krishna Shastri, provide something for the child to eat, he said. Suddenly a huge banana dropped from the top, from the bird, dropped it there, right? So Shastri says, I should have asked for something better than a banana. But that is the way it is, right? But he got the fruit, he ate that, and temporarily he had a relief from that, right? So our logic will say the bird was flying and somehow automatically dropped from there. That's how we will think about that, right? But for people like that Swamiji, for who is seeing Krishna's presence in all living entities, right? And when that knowledge becomes very strong inside, right, all the living entities in this world also responds in the same way. That means he was able to notice that that person, that sannyasi, had so much faith in Krishna's protective power that somehow it will come when it is actually required. That strong faith in Krishna's protective power was there, right? So this is the way it works in the Prakriti. But we have, because this all has to, should not be even spoken necessary. It has to have, practically in previous generations, they had the capacity to tap this knowledge from the Prakriti, from nature. How nature will provide when it is necessary. So many power forces in the nature work like that. In this way. When the baby is born, the milk is there for the baby. Who making this arrangement? How does that happen? Whatever medical science says, at the end of the day, it is happening even before the scientists were there. This system has been working. From the mother, the milk comes for the baby. So, a lot of arrangements in the nature are like that. So somebody asked this question, that how do you educate this to people, this system, that it is like this way. He said, And at home, even if you tell anyone, up to a limit you can tell them. After that, they won't listen to you. They will do what they want. That's the way it is, right? Including disciples even. These disciples also are like that. That's also nature, right? So, they will show humility and all that as though they are listening. But then, they won't listen. Because they will listen what suits them. They will listen to that, right? That includes everybody. In Satsangam also it is like that, right? So, Satsangam, it is like that. If somebody says something, and if you have liked it, you will say that, you will certify that it is right. It is right, right? So, that is the nature. Human nature is like that. If something is spoken and if you liked it, you will certify it was good, Satsangam. If you have said something and if you didn't like it, then you will not like, you will say that it was bad. It was very good, right? So, in the same way in Bhagavad Gita also, when Krishna is saying something, or somebody else is saying something from Bhagavad Gita, right? Only if it is in agreement with your mind, the person who is listening, if it is in agreement with him, then they will certify that it was a good class or it was a good, what Krishna is saying is right. But so that agreement from inside is the most difficult part. So what is Krishna saying here is that, you see that verse about Satyagat Jnanam, verse 20. Krishna is saying, when your knowledge becomes pure, that means when Sattvagunam is present in them, Sarva Bodeshu Yenegam Bhavam Avyayam Ikshade Avibhaktam Vibhakteshu Tal Jnanam Vidhi Satvigam. Even though everything is agreeable or agreed or not agreed that you are hearing in this world, you will see a thread, a current behind all these things flowing continuously. What that means is that Satya Jnanam, you will be able to differentiate from the that flow inside of Krishna's presence. For example, Rishis also says this in the Upanishads. There is a awareness bodham inside us, right? Everybody has that bodham, awareness inside us. And that bodham is permanent in all. The knowledge is coming from outside on different things, different matters comes. So when the knowledge comes, still able to see that this presence of awareness inside, which is accepting this knowledge, is same in everyone. So rather than seeing the information that has come from outside, he will see this awareness present in everybody. That way, you will not be disagreeing with anything. That is the nature of Satya Jnanam. Satya Jnanam means that you can see Rajasa Jnanam and Satya Jnanam difference. Rajasa means you will constantly create friction. You agree, you don't agree, disagree. And then you negotiate and all that. This has all become necessary because of Ragadvesham inside. Rajasa Jnanam it is. Rajasic nature that is. So this Rajasam influences your Jnanam. Satyam also influences Jnanam, but Satya nature influences the Jnanam in such a way that you will be able to conduct the business without confrontation. Whereas Rajasa Jnanam, normally what happens is lot of talking and finally a war after that to sort it out. This is the difference between Satyam and Rajasam. In Satyam mode, because you see the truth behind everything, Krishna is behind everything, that knowledge inside, of existence or that awareness behind everything will not make you very stubborn in your relationship with others. Or Satyam mode controls the Jnanam in such a way that it bring always seeing the oneness in everything. Because they are not different from you. You are negotiating with someone on some issue, on the understanding that they are separate from you. But if you have this awareness of oneness, of you existing in that person, a lot of that disagreements and conflicts will leave. You know, all kinds of things people do these days, isn't it? Even in, I see in spiritual organizations, they talk about conflict resolutions. How to resolve the conflicts by talking. They have some stupid understanding. They don't study Bhagavad Gita properly. Krishna is saying this, that if you are conscious of Krishna inside, in everyone's presence, in everyone's heart, then there is no conflict there then. Because Krishna is present in everybody. Where is the conflict coming from? Conflict is coming from because of the rajogunam inside. So instead of understanding the modes of nature and its effect on your mind, on your negotiations or the jnanam, you are coming from your rajasic nature. And then you are thinking like, you know, like United Nations and all that. They pass resolutions and they say that you have to impose something, they resolution they pass and they send it to you, you don't follow, and then nobody cares now anymore, and they do what they want. And this is all useless. That is, Prabhupada also used to say this United Nations is a total useless thing. Why? Because this Sattugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam is controlling everything. The important thing is to come to Sattugunam first, rather than forcing your Rajasic solutions, either through Rajasam. Negotiations are all rajasam. War is tamasam. So this is the two processes we follow now in conflict resolutions. And then there is war at the end. And then after war, they'll get tired after some time. And then they'll have a meeting together. And that also they won't agree each other. And then they will withdraw. And then they'll go and fight again. So this is the world. You can see how lack of proper understanding what Krishna is saying. You want a solution to the problem? This is the only solution. So that's what he is saying here, right? So Krishi also says the same thing. Yatra visham bhavati eganeedham. He says, you have to see that oneness in everything. What controls, right? Otherwise, there will always be this problem. You will be thinking in terms of your family, your country, your state where you are born, or your relations. This way, everything is limited in that way, right? So, rishis never spoke like that. They are saying that the whole creation becomes one. They always talk in terms of creation, not in terms of one country, or not in terms of one particular province, or things like that. They always say, if you understood this tattvam behind it, then the whole creation is one. There is not many here. Right? And the same Upanishads are always stressing this point. Nowhere you find a reference to any particular country or particular land or particular group of people. Right? Agnir urdhum chakshushi chandra suryo disha shrotrai vagvridascha veda vayu prano hridayam vishwamasya padbhyam pradivim kritiyesha sarvabhut andaratma. This is from the Mundaka Upanishad. It's a mantra in the Mundaka Upanishad. Whole universe is a manifestation and product of that causeless being, Krishna. In other words, referring to Brahman, right? The sun, moon, and all the quarters, all knowledge, and the souls of all existing beings are parts and manifestations of that single being. Everything, the source is that Antaryami, which we refer to as, right? So one who has realized this knowledge of the self, one who has self-realized, in other words, Hridayam Vishwamasya, says Upanishads. His world, his heart, is this world. World has become his heart, right? And he does not have me, you, they, or this, that, all this kind of Veda Buddhi doesn't exist in him. He sees the oneness in everything, right? So, and that knowledge, Krishna is saying, is proper knowledge. So, vastavik knowledge, real knowledge, and that is our goal. So, in order to get this knowledge, we have to purify ourselves, and that sadhana we have to execute for that. Yeah. Instead of saying this, that, and we shouldn't offend any process of upasana or sadhana, right? That is another dosh, another fault. Sometimes we have this tendency that we follow a path and we condemn others' path. That is not a good thing, because that person is following that path for some reason behind that, right? And similarly, some people, after studying Upanishads, then they are thinking that, oh, there is no need to go to temple anymore. There is no need to chant the holy name, right? And they will start looking at it in a, thinking that it is not such a, I am in a higher consciousness, that kind of thinking, right? But that is not the goal. The goal is to realize that, that seeing that oneness in everyone, and Jivan Mukta, a liberated soul, his symptom is like that. They have that capacity to adjust with every situation. For example, if they are going to a temple where Ganesh is present, Ganesh is installed there, and they will join everybody else and worship Ganesh there, in that temple. Similarly, if they go to Vishnu's temple, if they see Vishnu's form, they'll worship Vishnu there without any difficulty, right? And if they go and see some children playing together, they'll go and play with them also. In that way, they have matured themselves. And if somebody talks about the problems of this world, they will be able to talk to them about that as well. This is called Sarvatma Bhava. Sarvatma Bhava means that Atma is present everywhere, in everything. Whether it is in the deity form, in the children form, animals form, birds form, whatever form it is, Atma is present. So that awareness of the presence of the soul in everything, when that increases in a person, he develops this, what we call Sarvatma Bhava. Right? And a person who is advanced, liberated, you will find this, he is perfect in these things. Purna Purusha. Right? So, that perfection, what you find in people like that, and that is what Krishna is referencing it as, Sattva Prasadam. Sattvagunam's, increased Sattvagunam in a person. Its effect will be like this. When Sattvagunam increases in a person, he is in a Shanti state, because he does not have any confrontation with anybody, any conflict with anyone. Always in that Shanti state, and able to adjust with all situations, comes to him, right? So that is the main thing to talk, understand from that verse, what Krishna is saying there. Sarva bhudeshu yenegam bhavam avyayamikshade. With all living entities, able to deal with them as though they are not different from him, and able to see that oneness in all living beings. That will happen through Sattvagunam only. Only through Sattvagunam it will happen, right? And Krishna says, Tal jnanam vindhi sattvayam. Avibhaktam vibhakteshu. Namarupam form, we are all different, right? In the Namam Rupam, we are all different. But they don't look at Namarupam. They don't look at Namarupam. They only see Krishna's presence in everyone. That Sarva Bhudeshu Yenegam, Sarvalpa Bhav is in them. And that Krishna says that if Sattva Prasadam is there, if Sattva Gunam is increases in a person, he will be closer to this state. Then he says, Rajasic knowledge. The difference between Satyam and Rajasam, right? We told about that, the science, modern science, is Rajasic, right? Breaking up everything. totally opposite to the Satyagam. Satyagam brings you oneness. Rajasam makes you separate. That's the main difference, right? And you can see so many subjects are taught now, and there are specialists in every subject, is it not? I mean, how much engineering, for example, if you take. When we were studying, there was only mainly three subjects: civil engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering. After a few years, electronics came in. Then computer came in. Then information technology, another subject. Like this, it broke up and more, and in civil also became structural engineering specialists, this engineering specialist. So everything broken up like that. And same way with medicine, same way with all other fields as well, in the same way, right? So the thing is that when you break up like that, there may be some benefits from that. Nobody is denying that. You become more focused on one thing, more specialized knowledge, what they call it as, right? And just like in chemistry and all that, so many different types of chemistry is present there, analytical chemistry, and so many different names they have now for chemistry also. Where there is only physical chemistry, analytical chemistry, there is so many different types of chemistry also. So years ago, say about 50, 60 years ago, chemistry was not broken up like that. Then all the chemicals came, they start atoms and molecules and all that, right? So they started studying things like in that way. That's the process of acquiring the knowledge, right? And that knowledge is helpful in some ways. You will see the the result. There is nothing wrong in that. But the problem with this knowledge is that selfishness will come in that. Swartham will come. That means, unlike Sattugunam, Rajogunam's problem is that. For Ayurveda, modern medicines, all of that, you can see this. It may improve the understanding, but selfishness naturally comes to it. This you have to think about it, and you will understand what I'm saying is, in Sattvagunam, present in knowledge will not create selfishness. It will make you to operate in such a way in this world, you will be peaceful and you will be able to do a lot of good for others, provided there is Sattvagunam in us, right? Whereas when Rajogunam comes in, with specialization and with all this knowledge, you are breaking it up and doing research, and knowledge is coming. But because there is Rajogunam effect, you will become very selfish. You will look after, you won't have that nature of a person in Sattvagunam. It will be totally different, right? What is the reason for that? Why does selfishness comes? Because that sattvic knowledge is not there behind it. The sattvic knowledge is not there, right? Sattvic knowledge is that everybody else is also like me, right? And Andaryami, who is present inside me, is present in that person as well. That bodham, awareness, is not there when this rajasic knowledge comes, right? Then they will use that knowledge in the proper way. If sattvigam jnanam is there, you will use the knowledge in the proper way, right? So the problem is this, that because this is not there, this specialized knowledge can become dangerous. Can become dangerous, right? But if he has the sattvigam knowledge inside, right? This rajasic knowledge, what you have developed from your research and other things, it will help others. It may help others. It's a very Rishi's approach is correct. I'll tell you why it is, right? You see this Nobel Prize, right? Alfred Nobel developed this atom bomb, right? And after developing atom bomb, he saw what he has done. He realized it. Because there was no sattvigam in him, he saw the devastation, what he has created. Through him it happened, isn't it? Atom bomb was, he was a Swedish man, I think. Through him, the bomb was developed during the World War. And then he understood that what he has done was the greatest calamity. And his guilty feeling inside, what did he do? All the wealth that came to him, he gave it to this Swedish Academy to build this Nobel Prize system, right? Nobel Prize comes from that, yeah. He himself was not a good example, to tell you the truth, because the sattugunam was absent in him. The rajasic nature worked in him. And he created this bomb, and it created so much calamity, and the sinful reaction is still growing through people, even today, of what happened in 1945, after so many years, right? So you can see from that how when your karma is not right, you may be intelligent, you may be capable of getting the best results from the research and all that, but if that sattugunam is not there, you can become one of the greatest demons in this world. This is the danger. This is the danger. It is true with many other scientific projects in the same way. Sattugunam should drive the knowledge, not Rajogunam. That's the principle. Rishi's point is like that. If Sattugunam is not driving the knowledge, it will end up in dangerous situations later. So that is what is Tattvajnanam. Tattvajnanam means that. This is the Tattvajnanam. Knowledge behind the Tattvam, right? So, so this is the problem. That he realized this later, but it was too late by then. He has created the bomb, right? And now the whole world is fearful of his bomb, what he started with. Everybody has acquired that and everybody is threatening each other. So would you say that he has done something good for this world? From how will you say that? And not only that, now in his name, so many other people want to get that prize, this Nobel Prize they are working for. A demon who has created, his demonic nature has created this bomb, and now people want recognition on that behalf of that Nobel Prize. The whole world is thinking that one who has received. And a lot of those Nobel Prize winners also, their creation is also like their guru, Nobel, in the same way has they followed. So, rishis don't accept all these things. This is all nonsense because you can see from where rishis are coming from. They are saying, if sattugunam is not present, then all the knowledge what you have created through your rajogunam will eventually become a disaster for the world. It will only destroy others. It will not be able to do anything good for the world. This is their calculation and it is true. And it's true also. And that is why this unrestricted control of economic development and sense gratification eventually has to end up in a fighting and war. Because it's coming from Rajogunam. All this knowledge, technology and science behind, and everyone is feeling very proud about that. And they develop and then they push others. Through their Rajogunam, they push other countries to do the same thing. And they also fall into the same trap. And then eventually it ends up in dangerous situations, right? So you can see the difference between Sattugunam and Rajogunam, how it works in this world, right? Then in the Tamogunam, when it comes to, it says, Yattu Krishnavad Egasmin Karye Sattam Ahaitugam Atartatva Avadalpamcha Tat Tamasam Udahradam. Here the problem is, he says that Atat Atvartavad Alpam, he is saying. Krishna is saying there, Atat Atvartavad Alpamcha. Atat Atvartavad Alpamcha means there is no Tattvajnanam in a tamasic person. There is no tattvajnanam. Very limited he is. He is very limited. What is tattvajnanam? Tattvajnanam means that he does not know that one tattvam who is present in everybody. That tattvam he is totally missing. Right? His knowledge is very limited. Therefore, Krishna is saying, tat tamasam udahridam. It is tamasam. Yeah? And in other words, his knowledge is very much dominated by jadam. Knowledge dominated by jadam. Jadam means dead matter. That's the way his knowledge is. Purely on a dead matter. Whereas in sattvagunam, it is purely the presence of the soul. That antaryami present in everyone. That is in sattvagunam, right? So,
then, not atom bomb.
Yeah.
Dynamite.
But that developed later into bomb, isn't it?
Yeah, dynamite is a bomb.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, whoever has done that, the ultimate end result is disaster for the world. And from then on further developments happen and it's all Rajasamitis, right? Yeah. So 23rd verse, if you look, Krishna is saying earlier Krishna said jnanam yeyam parijnyada in the previous verses. 18th verse he said jnanam yeyam parijnyada trivida karma chodana karanam karma kartyeri trivida karma sangraha. Right? So karanam karmam karta, Krishna mentions that as karma sangraham previously. That is in the 18th verses. So, he was saying that the provocation or prerana from inside to engage in karmam is in these three ways. Jnanam, yayam, parijnyada. And he mentioned that indriyam, karmam, karta, karanam, karma, kartedi, trivida, karma, sangraha. He spoke about that in that 18th verse, right? Now, having spoken about jnanam, now Krishna is going to talk about karma, how it will happen, right? So, karmam, Krishna is going to say, is also in three different ways. See the power of three modes of nature, how it affects everything in our life. Varnashrama dharmam has come from three modes of nature. Knowledge is also under the control of three modes of nature. Now he's saying karma is also under the control of three modes of nature. So what is left then? Nothing is left. Everything is three modes of nature. So karanam karmam karta and karmam karmam's nature he is saying here that niyatam sangrahidam aragad veshadakritam abhala prepsuna karmam yatat sattvika muchyate. Karmam in the sattvic mode, how it happens, right? Niyadam sangarehidam aragad veshadakritam abhala prepsuna karmam yatat sattvika muchyate. In other words, niyadam nityam sangarehidam asakti varjidam aragad veshadakritam raga yuktena dvesha yuktena chakritam raga dveshadakritam tad vibaridam bhalam prepsi, idi bhala prepsu, bhala trishna, tad vibaridena, abhala prepsuna kartagadam, karma yad sattvika muchyate. In other words, without ragadvesham, one's life is, without attachment to the results, his daily karmam goes on, nitya karmam, without attachment and without any ragadvesham in there. And also no results expected from that. If one is able to execute the karmam like that is satyam. So satya karmam's nature is like this. That no attachment, no ragadvesham through the karmam. And no expectation of results from the karmam. So if there is no ragadvesham in the karmam, it means Kartrutvam shouldn't be there. If Kartrutvam is there, Ragadvesham will be there. And similarly, the results of the karma, what we call it as Bhoktatvam. Bhoktatvam shouldn't be there. If it is executed in that way, that is Satvigam, Krishna is saying. Niyadam Sangarehidam, Aragadveshadakradam, Abhala Prepsuna Karmam, Yatta Satvigam Uchyade. So, that Satvigam Uchyade. When he says that, Krishna is saying there, that a karmam is satyam. What does that mean? Means that on a daily basis we do karmam daily in our life, right? Niyatam means nityam, daily what you do. And it has come to you in a natural way, what you have to do in life, right? And that is in a karmam that you do for your livelihood. Yeah, it has come to you and you are doing that for your existence in this world, right? From Krishna is speaking based on the Varnashrama Dharma background, right? You can't bring everything into modern world. Modern world is so far out of all these things. It's a total chaotic state, right? So when we read Bhagavad Gita, we have to be careful also. Then, under certain conditions, Krishna expects people to follow the Vedam and Vedic injunctions, right? When we don't follow Vedam and Vedic injunctions, then what can you do about it? That means you're acting on your own selfish interests. So, identifying this karmam itself is a big spiritual breakthrough. To know what I have to do in my life. What should I do? What should be my occupation? How should I live in this world? To get that answer to that question itself is a big problem, big thing in spiritual life, right? What should I do? What's my dharma, right? How should I live in this world? So, not knowing this, people spend a lot of time in life looking for a occupation. What should I be doing, right? So, for example, they will walk towards the north, but actually they have to go to the east. But really they are going to the south. In this way, everything confused in that way, right? It means not clear in their head what they want to do, right? That itself is a big breakthrough in life. Not like the way it is done today. Today it is done that which profession gives you more money? And that's your profession then. It has become like that, more or less. Right? Wherever money is there, you are running after money. It may not suit your nature, and therefore you always have conflicts inside, and you will end up in problems, sometime or the other. Right? Because you have done something whole life, which is not based on your nature. In nature, right? So, traditionally, rishis are saying that you have to perform some austerities and penances to know what your nature is, what way you should engage yourself in life, right? You can see this between Vivekananda and Vivekananda Swamiji and Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, between the conversation between them about that, right? He spent a few years with him and executed various kinds of sadhanas together under his guidance, right? So Ramakrishna Paramahamsa told Vivekananda that I have given you everything what I have got to give you, right? And and then I asked him, what do you want to do now? He asked Vivekananda about that, right? And Paramahamsa knew that Vivekananda is going to do something big in this world. First time when they met each other, they met in Calcutta in a city, in someone's home, right? And that meeting was very important because that turned a lot of things in whole Bharata Bhumi, that meeting between them, in the sense that they laid the foundation more or less for the independence movement. It begins from that meeting. After that, the independence movement slowly built up, and then Gandhiji and all came into it much later, when he came back from South Africa, right? So freedom movement, and there was a big awakening of this meeting between Ramakrishna Paramahamsa and Vivekananda, right? And when they met each other, the first moment itself, Paramahamsa understood that there is something in this person quite unusual than others didn't have, right? And at the same time, Vivekananda was very young then, and he was inquiring about God. He wanted to understand, is there a God? And a lot of suffering he was seeing in the world, a lot of problems also, right? He thought, is this spiritual life a real one? That was his inquiry. Is it real, right? And sometimes he thought it is misleading, it is not real, right? But at the same time, he couldn't totally reject that either. And added to that, you have to go back into history at that time, what the situation was in the country, right? Education was all in English. British education was happening that time. And naturally, Britain dominated the world a lot at that time. So with that, young Indians, intelligent Indians, they started reading Western literature a lot. Obviously, science was not developed so much like today, but philosophy books they were reading from the Western philosophers. That's what they were, most of them were reading. There were famous German philosophers, English philosophers, Hegel, Kant, Nietzsche, and there was one Herbert Spencer, all these big, big names at that time. And they took great delight in reading those books and understanding their conclusions of life. About life, right? And after all studying all that books, Vivekananda got confused, because these philosophers, they have confused him completely. They couldn't know. He was totally in a lost world, because as far as they were concerned, they have presented everything in a way. They were not centered around any Krishna consciousness or anything in that way, right? So, he could not accept bhakti at that time, right? And he also engaged in arguments and proved it to his friends that God doesn't exist based on these teachings or the books what he has read, right? And then sometimes in isolation, he used to think about it. But inside, the power inside, Andanyami, was telling him, this is all wrong. He's reading all these books, which were denying the existence of a higher power. But inside, and he is going through this conflict all the time. Inside he is getting this Andanyami telling him, Krishna exists, God exists inside, right? But these books, none of them have any concept of Andaryami or anything. They have written such big, big books, you know, and all that, right? So, from childhood he had this problem within him, right? And then he will go into meditation. He loved meditation. Vivekananda loved meditation, right? So, and he didn't have to practice it. In a natural way, he had this meditative mood in him, right? So one day he asked him, Paramahamsa asked him, how do you sleep? He said, this is, I sleep like everybody else, I sleep that age also, right? So Paramahamsa told him, that's all right, others I know how they sleep, but how do you sleep? He said to him, he said, I just lie down and then I suddenly feel a presence of an effulgence in my sleep, and I fall asleep straight away, I dissolve in that sleep, he said. So Paramahamsa realized that this child is not an ordinary child. Some rishi has come. From the world of the rishis, somebody has come in this child's form, right? So, for particular reasons, he must have come here. So, when they met each other first time, it was in the house of a friend where there was some program for which they went, right? And Vivekananda Swamiji was very fond of singing, and he was very good at singing as well, right? So after hearing the song, Paramahamsa was very pleased with him, right? And he said that there is a child like this in Calcutta who is a nature like that. And so therefore, he invited him, said you should come to the Chineshwaram, where the Belur Matham is there, where Ramakrishna Mission originally existed there. So one day, after some time, Narendra, as he was known then, went to see him, to see Ramakrishna Paramahamsa there, right? So when he got there, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa made him to sit on a chair and offered arati to him, did arati to him, right? So so Narendra, who was then Narendra, told him that don't do all these things to me, I have nothing to be worshipped about. And says, so, at that moment, Paramahamsa put his hands on Narendra and touched him. With that, Narendra fell into a kind of a hypnotized state. And he knew that Narendra had some big plan in his life. Something big thing he is going to do, right? So, he has not become a sannyasi at that time. He was still Narendra, right? So when he asked him that, what do you want to do? Narendra said, all I want is to sit in isolation. Always he had that nature, to be alone, and to remain in that isolation, engage in meditation. That was his nature, right? And now and then he may eat some food, right? Apart from that, no other vyavaharam in this world. He never did anything, right? So, he told him, Paramahamsa told him that, sometimes people like you who are isolated from the world, they are the people who do some big things in this world, right? Whereas others who may want to do something big things in this world, it doesn't happen for them. So, anyway, Narendra's answer was that I don't want to do anything. I just want to be somewhere quiet and engage in meditation like that, right? So, but Paramahamsa told him, I don't think you're going to be like that, he said. One day something will happen in your life that you will be forced to do certain things which others won't be able to do. And that will be done by Prakriti itself. Prakriti will do that, he said. And then if you look into his life, Vivekananda Swamiji's life, you will see he wandered around everywhere, walking all sorts of places. Right from Kanyakumari to Kashmir, he was walking around everywhere. Right? And he was thinking, what do I have to do all this time? So you see how works for them. That before they do things, they will have to get convinced themselves that this is what they are supposed to do in this world. Only after, whereas for us, there is no such thing. We are like a stream to program the life, isn't it? Parents put us in a school, we went there. And then after that, the parents said, you go to that college, you went there. And then the parents told, you get married to this girl, you marry there. And then you had children. So everything parents are deciding and you are going along with it. That's not how they did. Vivekananda's case is a typical example. It's case with many other great personalities. They take time to decide what should be done in this life. And occupation, job and all that is not their priority. What am I supposed to do in this world? That itself requires an answer properly, isn't it? Because I have to know myself well. what I am capable or am meant to do in this world, the right thing what suits me, or that's my nature in me. And that takes time. That takes time. Vivekananda took a lot of time for that. Right? So, he wandered around all over. He mixed with all sorts of people when he was traveling. He met a lot of different types of people, mixed with them, right? And he took this decision in Kanyakumari. That's where he made the decision, right? That he will go to this Parliament of Religions in Chicago. He'll go there and attend that parliament. That decision he made in Kanyakumari at that time, right? Some people gave him money for that. And traveling was more difficult than today, then, in them days, right? And he took the money from people and he gave it to the sadhus who were present there. He had no interest in all that. And he decided that I'm not going. People had given him money and they told him to go, and but he was not interested in going there, right? So, inside this conflict still, what I should be doing, right? Vedavyasa Maharshi mentions this state of a person in Bhagavatam also, right? That Srimad Bhagavatam, before he wrote Bhagavatam, right? And Narada Maharshi spoke to him. And in his mind he has been analyzing, what should I do? Because Narada Maharshi explained the things to Vedavyas. It's not that everything was streamlined like the way we are thinking. Then Krishna told Brahma, Brahma told Narada, Narada told Vyasa, Vyasa told Shukabrahmashi told Parishi. The things happened in such a way, it was not programmed or planned in any way. They had to go through a lot of tapasya before that. Vedavyas also had to go through a lot of tapasya. Vedavyas was thinking, what do I do now? I've written Mahabharatam. I've wrote all these Puranams. Nothing else worked. Because people are not interested in studying these books. They don't have any taste for it. And they were more interested in the Yagam, Yajnam and everything. Then he wrote Brahma Sutram also. Mahabharatam he wrote. Is not having any impact on the people. Poor Krishi, he is thinking somehow or the other how to help them, seeing their suffering, is it not? So he was doing all what he could, but there was nothing happening. People are not responding for that. And in this confused state, he was thinking, what went wrong in what I have written? He is literally incarnation, isn't it? Krishna's incarnation is Vedavyas. So many years have gone in this way, in his life also, Vedavyasa's life, right? And then suddenly, one day, Narada Maharshi by chance came there, and they had the conversation. And that's what you call as Vyasa-Narada Samvada in the Bhagavatam. In the book comes, we are thinking all this is, you know, set up properly by somebody. It is not like that. It didn't happen that way, right? So, he sat there, let things happen in its own way. This is what was in Vedavyasa's mind. Let things happen in its own way. And then by chance, Narada Maharshi comes there, right? And then, but all this time, in Vedavyasa's mind, he is going through a crisis, right? I have done so much for the world, and it is not having any effect on the people. This was his frustration. He was feeling, because he was very serious about that. Yeah. In the same way, Vivekananda also felt that what do I do in this world? Great personalities all have this situation, right? So one day what he decided, Vivekananda, he jumped into the ocean and swam across to that river, the rock there. You see that famous rock, Vivekananda Rock. Without caring for anything, he swam through the sea all the way to the rock, right? Many people told him the sea is very rough and rude and there is nothing there on the rock. You get there, no food, nothing. How are you going to do that? But he went there. He swam there across and went to that rock, and for 3 days he sat there on that rock, right? To decide, what should I do? It took 3 days for him, whether to go or not to go, right? And finally he took the decision to go, right? And and that is how he decided to go to Chicago, right? So people will ask, you know, people ask others, what is my swadharma? What do I have to do? People ask that question, right? Then the answer is that you have to perform austerities and penances to find out yourself. Because it is a big thing in life if you know what you are supposed to do here in this world. Not like the way it is happening now. It's not making any sense, right? It's just everything driven by money. We have to survive in this world. So they go to school, go to college, and then some profession you pick up, whatever gives you more money, you go after that, work for 30, 40 years, you get your pension, and then you go from this world. Everything is over after that. So that's the way it is, right? So deciding this swadharma itself is a big thing in life. Yeah. So when finding out that process itself is, for some people it can come easily, sahajam, natural way it will come to them. And they make that decision in some early days in life itself and they get on with their life for the rest of it, right? But to find out from within oneself what one should do in this world, that requires a little bit of effort. Effort in the sense that Krishna's help is necessary. Antaryami has to give you that direction from within, right? So, it requires a certain amount of austerities and tapas before that, right? When the Ramayanam, you will find that all this army of monkeys who came to help Ramachandra, right? They were talking to each other, that they were seeing the distance was quite long. One of them said, I can jump one yojana. One yojana is 8 miles. Some of them were saying 2 yojana, I could jump. Different monkeys were saying different things, right? And this was 100 yojana, according to the Ramayanam, right? So, when they were all talking like this, Hanuman was not saying anything. He kept quiet about it, right? He is saying that I have nothing to do with this, no role in this, right? That's when Jambavan comes to Hanuman and tell him that you are the one who has to do this, he said to him. And in this way, Hanuman didn't agree that he has got the power to do that, but Jambavan tells him that you have the strength to jump to the other end, right? And so, at that point, more than Sugriva, it was Jambavan who has influenced Hanuman. And he told him that your power is as strong as Lakshmana, he says to him. Jambavan says to Hanuman, right? And Jambavan made Hanuman to realize that he is meant to do it. He has the strength to do it. And in that way, when Hanuman wanted to do that, naturally the strength in Hanuman increased to a very high power. So the secret of Swadharmam is like that, to find that Swadharmam in one's life, right? And why was saying all these things was, you see, Krishna used the word Niyatam. See that word? Niyatam. Niyatam means that Niyatam Nityarahitam. Nityam Sangarahitam. Sangarahitam Araga Dveshadakritam. This Niyatam is what means is what you are supposed to do here based on your destiny. Niyati. Niyati means destiny. What that has to be found out first. That is to be found out first. What you are supposed to be doing in this world. So, that is why he is saying that, right? So, like in Vivekananda's case, like in Anjaneya Swami's case, it took a long time for them to realize that they were meant to do these things. And once they have realized that, that's what is meant for them to do, they swing into action, and it was definite that they will be successful. So, so doing niyatam, that means the sodharmam that you are supposed to be doing, that not doing anything else, when you do that, naturally you will be in a happy state. You will be in a happy state, right? Whatever happens, right, even if it doesn't bring you name or fame or anything in this world, if you do that karma, you will be in a happy state. You will be in a happy state, right? And that is the beauty of sodharmam, niyatam. Sodharmam, the beauty of sodharmam is, you won't be unhappy while doing it. Like many of our cases, I don't know, some of the jobs, what I have done, I was not happy, but I was doing it. And that is only unhappiness inside. It's not a happy way of life. It's not, you have to do some work which you don't like it. But it so happened that that was the karma you had to do, you did that. That's all coming from this problem. That not knowing sodharma and not able to find out that at the right time and do that, didn't do that, and therefore all these complexities come from that. So that's why identifying sodharmam is a big step in life. It's a big step in life. But most of us don't get that opportunity. Nowadays everything is so topsy-turvy, they say. So, the benefit of doing that is, if you know your sodharmam, and if you do that sodharmam can be made a yoga easily, karma yogam. That karmam can become very easily a yogam. Karma yoga, it can become karma yoga. Otherwise, it's very difficult. When it is not sodharmam, and if you do a karmam, which is not your sodharmam, to make it karma yogam, it becomes more difficult. Right? So, that is what Krishna is saying. It should be niyatam, and it should be sangarehidam. Sangarehidam, right? That means without attachment you should be able to do that work. And the aragadveshadakritam. And in that case, there is no ragadvesham in that, right? And what else? Abhalaprayapsana karma. Abhalaprayapsana means, that means you are not expecting any results from that. Yeah? You are doing that. Yet that satya muchyare. So now you see where karmam becomes sattvīyam. First of all, you have to know the sodharmam, niyatam. And that sodharmam should be, you should be able to do without any attachment, sangarehidam. And also it won't create any ragadvesham inside. And then there should be no expectation of results. Abhala prayasana karmam, yathal sattvīyam uchale. That is sattvīyam. Krishna is saying that, right? So, you can see sattvīya jñānam, sattvīya karma. How, what level that happens? When does that happen in a person? Most of us live in rajasam tamasam mode, is it not? And that is why these things also become more difficult for us. Or does it exist like that, some sattvīya thing in the world today? Actually, there is no sattvīya karma now. Everything is rajasam tamasam. Is it not? So, look at the next verse. What is rajasam? Yattu kamepsuna karmam sa ahangarena vapuna kriyate bahulayasam tad rajam samudahridam. Any karmam performed with expectation of results, and that too with sense gratification, right? And done with pride, I am the doer, ahangaram, and with a lot of effort it is executed, that karmam is rajasam. That karmam is rajasam. So majority of the karmam falls into this category. Rajasam. So, yattu kamepsuna karmam, with the expectation of results, it is done. Right? Not only results, because behind that, you want the results, because there is strong desire for sense gratification. And then it is done with this pride, I am the doer, I am doing it, ahankaram. And it requires kriyade bahulayasam. Some people put a lot of effort into the karma, lot of endeavor in that direction. Kriyade bahulayasam. Tad rajam samudahradam. He says that is rajasam, right? So he says here, the ahankaram, is first thing is agraham, with the desire it is done, right? You will see a lot of people who are in this category, lots of people in this world. It is done with desires, right? And full of ahankaram, ego inside. The reason being, there is no tattva jnanam in the person, right? And because it is araga dveshada kritam satvanam, here it is, he's saying that, see, karmam sahankarena va. Sahankarena means it's ahankaram, right? Iti tattva jnana apekshaya. Tattva jnanam is not present in them. Ahankaram is present, tattva jnanam is not present, right? Then, laugiya shrotriya nirahankara apekshaya. Yeah? Means, here he is referring to people who are reciting the Veda in them, how it works, right? One who has studied Vedam, right? While reciting the Vedam, this ahankaram should not be there in him. And if he has knowledge, proper knowledge, then knowledge of the self, then this ahankaram won't be there. And therefore, the karma, what he does, right? Atma vidha. Na tasya kame pretsutvam bahulayasa kartutva prati asti. For that person will not have any difficulty in executing his karma properly. Let's understand that properly, right? He's saying satyasya abhikarmana anatma vidh sahangara karta kim uda rajasa tamasa yoho. When sattvagunam, when somebody is working, right, dharmam is executed, at that moment, his karmam is not having any ahankaram inside. Krishna said that in the last verse also. Whereas rajasic nature is, karmam, ahankaram will be present, right? So, so, if a person who is doing a sattvika karma, right? If he has no tattva jnanam, then ahankaram will be there. If tattva jnanam is not there, ahankaram will be there, right? If it is like that, what to say about rajasam and tamasam? One who is in sattvagunam itself, or sattvika jnanam itself, when he executes karma, there should be no question of ahankaram inside, right? And if the knowledge has not come, but his karma is satyam, but the satya jnanam has not come to him, right? And he has to do that karma without ahankaram. But if he is not doing that, then what to talk about rajas and tamasam, right? So Vedam says that one who knows Atma Tattva, knowledge of the soul, right, and Atma Vid, if he does not have Abhikarma, an Atma Vid Sahangara Karta Kimudhi Rajasa Tamseho, he is saying here that if you don't have the knowledge of the self, Atma Jnana, even then, or if you don't have Atma Tattva Sakshatkaram, self-realization, Shrotriyo Nirahankaram Uchyade. In other words, if he has followed the Sampradaya system, he lives in this world according to his Sampradaya. With that knowledge, if he lives in this world, he is saying here, Nirahankaram, in other words, right, Analpamavit means that he does not have self-realization, yeah? Shrotriyam, he studied Vedam. Nirahankaram Uchyate, right? In other words, Nirahankaram Ayam Brahmana, Iti Tasmata Dabekshaya Eva, Sahankarenava Iyuktam, Puna Shabdam Pada Puranartham. Sometimes, about Brahmana, he does not have self-realized, right? That means the knowledge has not fructified for him. But if you look at his nature, he doesn't have ego. We see people like that. They are not self-realized or anything. The knowledge is not working in them fully. But his nature, the person's nature, he does not have any ego in his life. Right? So, if it is like that, someone who has studied Vedam, for him it is an absolute requirement that there is no ahankaram in him. For a Brahmana who has not realized anything, but by nature he is very humble, and he is not very egoistic. There is no ego present in him, right? So we will refer to him, he does not have much of an ego, and see that Brahminical quality coming from him. The freedom from ego is in him, right? So he is not realized though, but that quality is already there in him. Which is like that, one who has studied Vedam, Brahmana who has studied Vedam, for him, it's absolutely essential that he shouldn't have any ego. Even one who has not come to that stage, realization. One who has studied Vedam means he has understood self-realization to a large extent, is it not? That is why he studied Vedam. Vedam, one who has studied Vedam well, he has good understanding of self-realization. He is not carried away by science and technology and all that. He is so fixed in the goal, right? But what he is saying here is, this is Acharya Swami's comment on that. The ordinary Brahmana, you respect him still, even if he is not self-realized, seeing his nature in him, that humility, truthfulness, and things like that. What is normal in a Brahmanical personality. So, he is saying that in a person, if you respect him for that, when you see that, right? If it is like that, Acharya Swami is saying, what to talk about a Brahmana who has studied Vedam very well and he has some realization of that, you would expect from him a complete humility from him, total humility, is it not? So that is what, completely freedom from false ego should be there in him. What he is saying here is that Rajasam is false ego, isn't it? Rajasic nature is false ego. I am doing this, I am big, I am good at it, and I have done this. All these things is coming from Rajasam. Whereas if you look at a person in Satviyam, totally opposite. No ego, no ahankaram, no pride about anything what he is doing. Total freedom from that. Yeah? And therefore, Kriyade Bahulayasam. Yeah? That Kriyade Bahulayasam means that when Rajasic person does karmam, he'll be totally exhausted because of his endeavor, effort, working so hard, all those things, right? Tad Raja Samudakadam. So therefore, Rajasic people, when they do karmam in Rajasic mode, the very nature will be they'll be working very hard with a lot of effort they put in, right? Tat karma rajasam udahkritam. So, so you can see that majority of the people is this rajasam category in this world. It's nothing you can do, it's just the way it is. Majority of the working world is rajasam or tamasam. That also we'll see later, right? Mm-hmm. And also it is rajasic people who need holidays. It is they who want holidays, right? That rajasic nature in them, and they will go on a weekend, they have to go to waterfalls or a big gardens or this or that. This is all product of this rajogunam inside, right? Because they are doing the karmam in that way. So they need that holiday. Right? So, and that is what that is saying here, that oh, this is the only time we can be a little bit relaxed. They'll work for 2-3 months, then they will run away somewhere else to relax. To relax, they will go 500 miles away or 1,000 miles away to relax. All after working so hard for so many months, few months, then they want a holiday straight away. This is all that rajasic nature is doing this for them. They are not aware of all that. They think they had enough of it, this world. Whereas sattvagunam don't create that. Sattvagunam doesn't create that. So, kriyate bahulayasam means that a lot of desires inside, and while doing the karmam, through that, karmam is making him more ambitious in life. Lot of ambitions builds up inside, right? If that ambition is not there, they cannot do the karmam. Ambition is driving them after that. That means you have to forcefully create ambition in them to get the karmam done. To get the karmam done, you have to create ambition in them. Only then they can do the karmam. It is this technique what was spoken in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has spoken that all the big corporations, they have picked it up from there. We have taught them how to do that, right? And the sannyasi's business is this now. Teaching corporations how to create ambitions in their workers' mind. They become productive that way. This is what's going on. The spiritual field, we have degraded to this level. We are using Bhagavad Gita for this purpose. To create ambition in young people's mind and educating these corporate executives so that they are getting, we call them as motivational, isn't it? Motivational speakers. It's a whole market for them to do this, right? So they picked up all these things in the name of business management. Go and, sannyasis are going and giving classes. Sannyasis are doing this, giving classes to these big corporations, right? And and they also know this secret. They picked it up from here. That how to motivate people and increase their desires and motivate them, make them ambitious. And that's what motivation means, isn't it? Making them ambitious in some or the other. Make them create desires in their heart. And if you create desire, ambition and all these things, then he will become your slave. Very subtle way of controlling people. You create desire and ambition in their heart, they will become your slave then. They will become your slave. And that is rajasam. This is all coming from rajasam. Rajasic nature, right? Now look at tamasam, next one. Anubandham chayam himsa anabekshaja paurusham mohadarabhyade karmam yatta tamasam uchyade. Verse 25, right? when karmam is dominated by tamoguna, what happens? Right? Anibandham kshayam himsa, anabhekshaja paurusham, mohal arabhyade karmam, yatta tamasam uchyate. Anubandham means when he is doing karmam in tamasam, he does not think about the consequences of the karmam. Anubandham. No, doesn't think. Lot of people are doing this also. So basically if you look into the world outside, most of it is rajasam or tamasam. Where is the satvika karmam done? Mostly it is rajasam or tamasam. Right? So, the problem is that without knowing the consequences, the karma is executed, right? And not realizing that if I do this karma in this way, what will happen? By the time you finish the karma, you are exhausted. All your energy is exhausted. That means your money will be drained and your health and your energy, all, everything gets reduced, right? And in some instances, you may have to give trouble to others as well, through your karma. You become a cause of anxiety for others. Some karma is like that, right? And that is what Krishna says there. Mohad arabhade karma. Arabhyade karma. Mohad arabhyade karma means that, so you can see these big, big, what do you call them? The conquerors, Alexander, or Muhammad Ghori, Muhammad Ghazni, who come and destroy temples and all that, right? And Alexander, we call him Alexander the Great. I don't know what the great about this, that he's gone and plundered so many places and people, right? So they in their time, what they did was they conquered places, set fire to places to destroy others, and murdered a lot of people. And in the schools, they taught us Alexander the Great. What's so great about that, what they've done, right? So they didn't think about the consequences of what they have done. Right, and gave a lot of trouble to a lot of people, killed a lot of people to fulfill their ambition of conquering other countries. Right, and was he happy after doing all that? He was the most miserable person. We are talking one example, and it is the same with others also. Aurangzeb, Muhammad Ghazni, Muhammad Ghori, all these people, right? Conquerors, Genghis Khan, right? And apparently Alexander left the world when he was 32 years old. And why did he do that? Or what he did? He also doesn't know why he did that. Right? And that is what is called that moha. Delusion. Without knowing why have I done all these things. No thinking about it. Till the age of 32 he traveled and plundered and destroyed a lot of people, killed them, and increased his so-called empire. And he couldn't even stay. He was killed by 32 and he was left this world, right? So, so for them, giving trouble to others, and if you ask what did you gain from all this, they don't know. They have no answer for that, right? So this kind of karma, there's no need to talk about it further, right? A lot of these things you can see nowadays. Not nowadays, it always happens, right? It's not the politics side of it. Just analyze the karmam side only. Politics is another side. Due to political reasons, big, big, powerful countries, they send the army to some people to solve the problem. You can see, and then they want a regime change. And in that process, they kill a lot of people. And finally, they realize that why did they do all this? What did they come out of it? For example, that Iraq invasion. They said that Saddam Hussein had all the weapons of mass destruction. And they sent the whole army there. And a lot of people, millions got killed in that. And what happened at the end? There was no weapons there. And Saddam got killed. And the leaders who took all these decisions, they are not answerable. So that is tamasa. Typical examples of tamasa. And this happens again and again and again. Repeatedly this is happening. What happened in Afghanistan? All these are examples of this tamasic thing. Russians invaded Afghanistan, if you know the history bit, what's going on. In view of this karma, I'm saying this. They invaded Afghanistan, and the Americans realized that they have to balance it, so they took Pakistan into confidence and supplied all the arms and equipments. Russians were driven away. Then Taliban came in. This is all, it's not talking about politics now, I'm talking about how things happened there. Taliban comes in, and then they started fighting, and the American left everything there and they ran away from there. So this, what is came out of these things? Total, without any clarity in the head, action is taken, thinking that they have solved the problem. Nothing was solved by any of these wars. Tattamasam udakradam, Krishna, tattamasam uchyade, Krishna saying. So you can see karmam happens in these three modes. Sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam. In tamogunam, absolutely you won't have any benefit from that. Especially from an absolute platform. From a spiritual platform, you don't gain anything. But even on a material platform also, you can see that it is done in this mode of chayam, himsa. A lot of people died. And sometimes when the war is over, when the soldiers come back, they are practically crazy. After all what has happened, himsa, because of the himsa involved. Anabhekshaja paurusham yatta tamasam uchyade. So there is a whole purport about that, saying that unable to take into account the loss of wealth and the loss of energy, in the sense that destruction of the army and the forces, yeah, and the violence involved, and simply deluded by, simply by delusion, moham, they engage in karma, and that is tamasam, right? So, after saying this, Krishna is saying, so he so spoke about jnanam in sattvagunam, rajagunam, tamagunam, then karmam in sattvagunam, rajagunam, tamagunam. Now, the person who is doing the karma, karta, how he comes in sattvagunam, rajagunam, tamagunam, the one who is doing the karma, right? Satyuga doer, that is the next verse, 26. Mukta sango anahamvadi driti ulsaha samanvitaha siddhya siddhyor nirvikaraha karto satya muchyade. Mukta sango anahamvadi driti ulsaha samanvitam siddhya siddhyor nirvikaram karta satya muchyade. Without asakti, attachment, right? Without ahangaram, with full confidence, dhairyam, and enthusiasm, and totally unaffected by the results, able to engage in a karma, he is in the mood of sattvagunam. Satyam, karta. Karta is satyam. Mukta sango, mukta parityakta sango yenaha, enasa mukta sangaha, anaham vadi, na aham vadana shila, dridi ulsaha samanyutam, dridi dharanam ulsaham, udhyamam tabhyam samanyutam, siddha siddhyo, kriyamanasya karmanam. So, me and mine, basically it's karma yoga, it is. Me and mine is not there, right? And I am the doer and I am the enjoyer, is not there. He does not have that habit. I've done this, I've done that, or I'd like to have this result. No, he's totally separated himself from the work, right? At the same time, he does it with full enthusiasm and with full dhairyam, dhriti, with that, right? So, dhriti ulsaha samanyuta, he is saying. He is the one in karta. Karta is like that, right? How else he says there? Mukta sangam. Mukta sangam means he is always free. Only then you can do things properly. You have to be free yourself, right? Especially people who are doing big, big things. You can notice this also in some people who are managing big, big things. They are always detached to the work, what they are doing, right? So, if you want to do big things, you have to be Mukta Sangam, right? If you are doing the big things, right, you can only do it if you are not sticking to it. If you are not sticking to the results, right? And he is Nisangatvam, is there. And only then he will be able to handle it. That he is able to see everything on an equal level, right? And if you are doing something for yourself, thinking of yourself only, and whatever karmam you do, it will be very limited. That means to able to do karmam without attachment to the results, right? People who are very detached and renounced, the karmam that they do, ordinary people won't be able to do that. Won't be able to do that. That means people, ordinary people I'm talking about, people who are very much attached to family, home, they won't be able to do things who are, we can only do limited things in our capacity, right? But those who have no attachment anywhere, they can do bigger things. They can do bigger things, right? So, we are samsaris, isn't it? Absorbed in samsaram. Samsaris have limitations, everything, right? Not necessary to think grihastha or sannyasi, right? Suppose even if he is grihastha, if he is a tyagi means that he is not doing it for himself, but doing it for others, without caring about the results, what comes from that, right? Then he may be able to do bigger things. He may be able to do bigger things, right? Whereas people who are very selfish, for them to do anything big is difficult. Because they may even find their own things, what they are doing, will not come out properly, perfectly, in other words, right? Institutions collapse because of this. Big institutions, they collapse afterwards, right? For example, a generation, one Mahapurusha, great personality, starts an institution, right? And that institution, because he was a tyagi, he sacrificed everything in his life for the sake of institution. And he built up an institution. But when he leaves, what happens? When he was present, under his influence, a lot of people will do a lot of sacrifice for him, seeing his sacrifice in nature. Many others will join and serve him in a sacrificing mood, right? And because he is a tyagi, he was capable of creating many more tyagis like him, and he did that, right? When that great personality goes away from the scene, right, what happens? Then it will be devotees and disciples. They will take control of the situation, right? When devotees and their disciples are there, a little bit more time it will drag on. That same institution will carry on for some more time. But after that, when the next generation comes, it will be all managed by congregation. You can see how that tyagam goes away gradually. And then it will become employees and employer. You see how an institution goes, changes its nature. It started with one person sacrificing nature. He sacrificed everything in his life to build that institution. And he inspired many other people to become like him, tyagam, seeing that tyagam. Others followed him. So the big institution was created. he left the scene, and then the first generation after him, who were his disciples or devotees, they started managing. So it will still carry on, but doesn't have the same growth like it used to have before. It won't have. But it will carry on for some time. And then later on they also disappear, these disciples and the devotees. And then it comes in the hands of congregation management. Congregation, and they are just like visitors, they come. And then it goes further down, but they also after some time give up. The institution becomes employees, full of employees, and the management, then management, and the employees. And then that's the end of it. The institution is over. The purpose for which it was created is not doing that job anymore. It is just an institution running for namesake. It has lost its spirit completely. Right? So, so that's why when they say the first person who started is enlightened, the next one is disciples and devotees, then followers. And gradually that spirit waves off, right? Fanatics and then bureaucrats and then office bearers and all that, one after the other. So many titles. You become, then these designations become very important. Then they become office bearers. I'm temple president, I'm temple commander, and that's my, I'm the head of this preaching program and this, that. Everything is very much identifying with the position you hold, right? This is the way how the parampara works. Parampara system, right? And little by little, it comes down, right? There are so many, you go to all these places where great personalities lived. You will see these changes have happened. Great personalities were there one time. But if you go now, there, they have disappeared, say 100 years ago or 50 years ago. Now if you go there, what do you find? There will be a table. A man will be sitting there, right? And there you have to buy tickets to see. It become more like a museum. And they will preserve all his dhoti and the shoes, what he was using. You can go and look, oh, this is what he was wearing, was it? And this is the bed he has slept. And this is happening now, everywhere it is happening. That, some people, places, they kept the car what he has used. Nicely they kept it. So that others could see this Mahatma was traveling in this car. This is the bed he has slept. This is the bathroom he has used. And this is where he sat and wrote the books. All this. What relevance has it got to do with spiritual life? This is totally left. The whole spirit is gone completely. Right? So, Tyagaraja Swamiji's place, right? Tiruvarur, if you go there, one person wrote about this, he said. Tyagaraja Swami saw Lord Ramachandra there. Ramachandra Swami, Sri Ramachandra gave him darshanam there to Tyagaraja, right? And if you, when you go there now, what happens is that it has been taken over by the government, finally. Because when nobody is there to manage it, ultimately, the government takes over, right? So government is keeping it like a museum, and government, so some people went there and they didn't know what it's all about. So they asked them, was one man sitting there in front of a table. I asked him, what is happening here? He said, oh, this is the place where Ramachandra, Sri Ramachandra revealed himself to Tyagaraja here, right? So, and people were coming here and they were all, they had nothing to do with Tyagaraja Swamiji or to the museum. They were just there to manage the place. Government, they sent them there. And they are government employees who are managing that, right? Office bearers, as they are called, right? So, so all spiritual organizations ends up in this way. Sakale neham hada yogo nashta parantava. That's what it means, right? The yogam has gone. Shastram is still, the people are still there. Sakale neham hada yogo nashta parantava. Krishna said that in the Bhagavad Gita. Due to influence of time, everything will be lost and the remnants will be like this, right? So, so Krishna diagnosed this from beginning itself in the Bhagavad Gita. He mentioned this in the Bhagavad Gita. Sakale neham hada yogo nashta parandava. Yogam is gone. So due to the influence of time, right? So due to that, the spiritual element will keep decreasing gradually, right? Sa evaya maya tedyam yoga prokta puradhana. So Krishna is saying, Bhaktosimi sakha chedi rehasyam heda duttamam. That is the verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Sa evayam maya tedya yoga prokta puradhana. Bhaktosimi sakha chedi rehasyam heda duttamam. Krishna says, so that yoga system I have spoken, Arjuna, I'm going to tell you now, he says, right? So, if you are in this bhakti process, right, somewhere it will come up again, in some form, it will come up again, right? Fresh, it has to come. That is how this spiritual knowledge works. In one place it will appear, and it will stay for some time, and then it will slowly degrade, and it will disappear. And somewhere else, some halma will be born, somewhere. We never know where it will be, who it will be, nothing. Another mahalma will come in some other time, later on, and then he will also come out with a similar, fresh, he will come out with that, right? And it may not come at the same place where you think it will come. It may not happen there. We may think that, oh, the other mahalma has built all these temples, so it is going to happen in Mayapur, it's going to happen in Vrindavan, or it's going to happen in Bhaktivinoda Manor. It may not happen. It may happen somewhere else, right? So, so this Vaidika Parampara, Vedic traditions, is just like an open field, right? And often, now and then, powerful personalities will appear somewhere at some time. That's the way. It will keep on coming like that. It has always been like that. Some medicinal properties like herbs, like that, they will appear in this Vaidika tradition at somewhere, at some point in time, right? So, and in order for them to come, and when they come, they sacrifice their life for the benefit of others, right? So, so that person who is coming like that must have a lot of power in him to do that, right? So Vivekananda talks about that, about Lord Buddha. He said when Lord Buddha came, right? He came and he enlightened the world, because all what Buddha has spoken is Upanishad's knowledge. Everything is Upanishad's knowledge, right? But when Buddha disappeared, they made Buddhism out of it. Who? The followers, right? So, and then they created this sannyasis, all sannyasis, all shaved up, and Buddhism type of sannyasam started, right? So, so the great personalities, their strength is creating this sacrificing mood in the followers, that they are able to sacrifice their happiness in this world for a higher ideal, higher principle, right? So that's what they have done. So, because by their work, they opened up the passage for many other people to the path of liberation. That's what they have done, right? So Vivekananda was very good at this. He was inspired many people in his time. And that eventually developed in the form of freedom fighters. All that freedom fighting, Gokhale, and Bal Gangadhar Tilak, many, many, many great persons, Mahatma Gandhi, all of them, Subhash Chandra Bose, they were all actually were inspired in a very subtle level by Vivekananda. Had a role in all of them. That is why he is so much admired still for his presence. He appeared and then he lived only till he was 39. He left this world. But by then, because of his actions, the way he conducted himself and his lectures, all these other personalities got inspired. Even though they didn't work with him, they got inspiration from him to go. So I'll stop there today. We'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Dinatmoto ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.